Welcome to episode number 318 of the Family Podcast Network. Today we're going to talk about the 10 mistakes that Trey has made. That's right. We're going to adapt a list that comes from thoughtcatalog.com. It was called 10 Ways You're Making Your Life Harder Than It Has to Be. We're going to adapt that and make a parenting version out of that. But these are going to be specific to the mistakes that Trey has made in his parenting career. Stay tuned for that and more.
Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network. Here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. It doesn't matter if you're expecting, if you're a brand new mom and dad, or even if you're a longtime seasoned parent. There is always something we can do to take our parenting to the next level. Today is July the 2014. Our topic today is going to be the 10 mistakes that Trey has made. So some of you guys are wondering, what the heck, Trey? It's Friday. Where the heck is Jeff? That's a good question. I have no idea where he's at. I'm just kidding, guys. He's out of town, and he knew he was going to be out. We had talked a little bit about maybe seeing if we could squeeze in like an early recording, but this week has just been birthday parties for other friends' kids. My daughter's having a birthday party tomorrow or Friday. When you guys are listening to this, we're going to have one on Friday. And so, anyway, it's just it was too busy, and so Jeff is out of town right now. And since we missed our show on Monday, there's no way I was going to miss two. So we're going to pull in our Wednesday show here into Friday and cover it again. We're going to go over the 10 mistakes that Trey has made. That's right. We're going to go over some of the glaring errors. You know, one of the things that we're comfortable here at the Family Podcast Network about doing is being open and honest about where we screw up as parents, because we cannot get better until we can figure out where we're not. So we're going to go over that a little bit today. Before we do, quick housekeeping, guys. If you want to get notified of all new episodes come out on The Family Podcast, jump over to thefamilypodcast.com. Right-hand side, enter in your name and your email address. That just puts you onto an email list that says, hey, new show came out today. Here's what it is about. Make sure that you don't miss out on that one show that could have changed everything. Don't forget to like these on Facebook. If you're a Facebooker, maybe you got here and you're listening to this because of Facebook, don't forget to go over there and like it, guys. Facebook has been kind of a turd about that. So if you guys don't like it, not everybody gets to see it. So every time that you guys hit like, it just increases the likelihood of this show getting spread out there to those of you folks that say that you want to get it, but Facebook is preventing that. So jump on over there and hit that like button. I want to say thanks to all the people that do that. Guys, also, if you want to support the show, 30 cents per episode, if you're getting three measly little dimes at every single one of these, and information, all that other good stuff, we keep this thing priced low because we don't want to hang on to this information selfishly. So consider becoming a PTAC or support the show, three dimes. You can simply do it by becoming a PTAC or click on there. You can do it monthly, which is cheaper, or you can do it yearly, which actually you have bigger savings when you do that. Whenever you do get access to exclusive stuff that is available only to you guys as members. Also, guys, if you have any questions, comments, thoughts, concerns, give us a holler. Trey Gibson at thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. You can also call us at 661-PARENT and the number 0. Again, that is 661-PARENT-0. Give us a call on your phone. Remember, you won't go into an automatic line or anything like that. You can go into a recording that allows you to ask your question that way. Remember, question first, details last. All right. With all of that out of the way, let's go ahead and quickly get into our topic for today. I didn't want to spend too much time today on the intro segment. I thought we really kind of need to jump into the show and get it started. So again, we're going to talk about the top 10 mistakes that Trey has made. Now, this was adapted, again, out of thoughtcatalog.com. A gentleman named Tim Hoach wrote an article over there called 10 Ways You're Making Your Life Harder Than It Has to Be. My wife, I actually read this because of a buddy of mine who posted this out. And then my wife got on and saw it, and she tagged me and was like, hey, Trey, look at this. I was like, hey, great minds think alike. And so we're going to go over these because the fundamental concept behind these mistakes are common mistakes that I think we make in our regular lives outside of our parenting. But then I think it's very, 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 very simple for us to bring these mistakes into our parenting as well. And so we're going to talk a little bit about how those affect us. So Let's go ahead and jump into that today. Number one, you ascribe intent. This is one of my favorite ones out of all of them. Another driver cuts you off. Your friend never texted you back. Your coworker went to lunch without you. Everyone finds a reason to be offended on a steady basis. So what caused you to be offended? You assigned bad intent to otherwise innocuous actions. You took it as a personal affront and a slap in the face. Happy people do not do this. They don't take things personally. They don't ascribe intent to unintentional actions of others. Wow. But I really want you to think about this. How many times have we done that to our kids? How many times have our kids done something and we've automatically assumed, we've inscribed the intent of it being nefarious or criminal or defiant, whatever, and we've jumped down their throats whenever really it's all something different? I think that we have a tendency to do this in and of itself. We have a tendency to assume the worst in people. And we really adopt a premise here of expect the best in people. Believe the best. Be ever ready to believe the best in one another, including our kids. But I think we have a tendency to see what they're doing. We see the behavior, and otherwise behavior that is just as benign as any other thing that they could do, and we assume that it must mean that they're being a jerk, or they're being defiant, or rebellious, or disrespectful, when it's not always do this. So one of the things that I'm really recommending is you don't ascribe intent to the unintentional actions of other people. A couple days ago, we were sitting down, I was getting ready in the morning, and you know, my wife and I are very protective over our morning time, where we really sit down and we have a cup of coffees and several cups of coffee in some cases. But we just visit. It's fellowship time for us. We talk about what's going on, what's been happening with us, you know, future plans, past things, all that other good jazz. It's just it's a good relationship facilitation time for us. And anyway, we got done with that, and I got down and I was getting my clothes out and I was ironing them, getting my clothes ready for the day. And my daughter Anna came up and she started talking about this spot that was hurting. And I took a look at it, and I mean, it was obvious that she had a bruise and a scratch. And I said, "Oh man, that must have hurt." But she kept bringing it up, and she kept bringing it up, and she kept bringing it up, and she kept bringing it up. And I found myself starting to get frustrated. So naturally, what I was doing was, as I was starting to think to myself, she's being annoying. She's being pushy or something like that, you know. And I started getting more and more frustrated with her. And finally, I mean, at that point, I was ascribing intent. I was ascribing what she must be doing to her. And finally, I chilled myself out. And I said, "All right, Trey, you're being a jerk here. You're being a turd head." So that's my sophisticated terminology there, guys. But I brought it down and I said, you know, I said, "I'll tell you what, Anna, I'm not really understanding why you're repeating yourself here. What makes you feel like you need to tell me this over and over?" Mind you, guys, I use the word "what," not "why." Remember, "why are you doing that?" often invites defensiveness. Say, what are you trying to ask me for? What are you needing from me when you ask that?" And she sat there and she goes, "Well..." And so, backstory, that morning, my son and we've started a walk in the morning where my son and I get up and then we go on a walk together. And she goes, "Well, Dad, I just wanted to talk to you. I don't feel like I've gotten to see you very much. And so I wanted some extra time to talk to you like you had with Grant." Shot through the heart, and Dad is to blame, baby. Apparently, I give fathering a bad name. But it shot me just right in the heart. And I realized that she was right. I realized that I've been busy, and we've had 1,000 different things going. We haven't sat down to get that time. And yet Grant, you know, her brother has started getting some time with me in the mornings, just the two of us when we walk. And so because I was walking into that trying to ascribe intent, I denied myself one of the biggest things. And the biggest things that I was losing out of this was the opportunity to figure out what she was really feeling. Because if we make our mind up that things must be what they are, we add the intent that we think that it must be, often that'll keep us from asking questions. What is going on? What is up, baby? What's, you know, I'm not understanding here. What are you needing from me? And you'd be amazed the answers you can get that. All right, number two, you're the star of your own movie. It's little wonder that you believe that all the world revolves around you. After all, you have been at the very center of the very experience that you've ever had. You're the star of your own movie. You wrote the script, and you know how it will unfold. You even know how you want it to end. Unfortunately, you forgot to give your script to anyone else. As a result, people are unaware of the role that they are supposed to play. Then, when they screw up their lines or fail to whatever, or don't give you a promotion or whatever else, your movie is ruined. Lose your script. Let someone else star once in a while. perhaps new characters, embrace plot twist. This is a little bit of a doofy that's what I'm looking for, metaphor here, but I don't necessarily disagree with it. I don't dislike it. I see this more often than parents want to admit. And I'm talking good folks. I'm not talking about those crazy narcissistic type personality disorders where it's like, holy crap, that's crazy. I'm talking about regular average people just like you listening to this show. I see people become intrinsically focused on themselves so often. Now, when we talk about our parenting experiences, one of the things that we discuss is the absolute very best thing that we can do for our kids is to start becoming focused on their objectives. Why? It's not because we should dote on our kids and give them everything they want. That doesn't mean that focusing on their objectives means that you give them every toy that they want. But that might mean that you get them in positions to where they can afford to get jobs so that it can save the money to buy the things that they want, right? We focus on their objectives and we help them meet them. That doesn't mean we meet their objectives for them. So one of the best things that we talk about here that you can do for your family is begin to focus on their objectives. And also teach them to do the same. If you get a group full of family that are focusing on the objectives of each other, man, it's powerful. But I think we have a tendency to see ourselves as the center of the world. Everything revolves around us. It's about me. The other day, I'd come home, and I'd gotten home a little bit later in the afternoon, early evening, we'll say, late afternoon. And I came through the door, and everybody was happy to see me. And my wife, our dryer broke down, and one of the heating coils took a dump on us. And so we've been going over to my mother-in-law's just down the road, and drying the clothes there after we wash them in our own washer. And so Corey's been packing it up. So I'll come home, and she's typically loading clothes up in the car as I'm coming in. And I'll walk in, and it's close to dinner time. So she'll leave, and I'll start cranking up some dinner. And the kids will come up and say, "Dad, can you play with us?" And I'll be like, "Well, I got to get some dinner done and whatnot." And I begin to see myself as how everything that they're wanting from me begins to affect me. But so as I don't play with the kids, their behaviors begin to escalate and get worse and more fussy and more honky and more gritchy and more screamy at each other. And it just gets worse and worse and worse. And I begin to discover that the more that I focus on my needs, the more that I focus on the things that I want or feel that I should have, and I say that with air quotes right there, should have, the more that I find we lose the cohesion in our family. I learn that I begin to focus more on the things that I'm needing and less on the things that the kids needing, and that equates to worse behavior. And guys, there's been times where I've caught this in the middle of me doing it and made a switch around to just do anything. Sometimes it's just lay down with them in the evening and watch a movie with them as they're winding down before bed. Sometimes it's just sit down and play hide and seek with them for just a little while, and I'll watch those behaviors begin to get better. And I think sometimes we have to let other people, maybe that's not the right way to word it, I think we have to get ourselves to a point where we recognize it cannot be all about my desires, how tired I am, how wiped out I am, how much I have to do, how much work I've got to get done. Sometimes we absolutely must take a look at the needs of people around us. Frankly, I don't think we can genuinely be happy in parenting until we get to this point. Because parenting takes so much work and so much effort and so much time and so much focus that the reality is if you walk into it expecting to get a whole lot out of parenting, it will kill you. It'll drain you until the point that you are emotionally, mentally, or maybe even physically dead. And so I don't think we can really derive happiness out of parenting until we recognize that parenting has nothing to do with us. It's not about how rewarding it is for us. It's not about how good it makes us feel. It's not about how successful we feel when we're done. It has to be about our kids. Again, that doesn't mean you let kids trample on you. That doesn't mean that you let them walk all over you. That doesn't mean that you don't set boundaries. And it certainly doesn't mean that you give them everything that they want. But it means that at the center of your heart, the most important thing is, what do my kids need? Now, I'm going to give a real quick segue before I move on to the next one. That does not mean that sometimes the answer that is, they need a less grumpy dad. They need mama to be less honky all the time. By the way, for those of you guys who don't know, in the Casa de Gibson or Homestead de Gibson language, honk just means to gripe at somebody typically. It could be a benign, you know, light gripe, or it could be a heavy-duty, a loud honking is what we might call it. But kids need us to not be griping and honking at them all the time. And so sometimes that is, I need to get work done so I can go to bed earlier, or I need to get these things finished out so that way they get a better daddy. I'm not saying those things don't need to happen, but I think we use it as an excuse. We use that as an excuse to put ourselves at the center of the world all the time and forget that our kids need something from us. Guys, I'm horribly guilty at these first three. I really am. And so anyway, but nonetheless, we can be aware of it. Be ready to, as they say, lose the script. Number three, and I'm kind of taking some liberties here to define number three in a more parenting-friendly way, but we have a tendency to catastrophize. The author, Tim, here says we fast forward to apocalypse. I think this is very true. I think we look at things like defiance, kids continuing to do things when we ask them not to, resistance, even things that seem to be resistance, or emotional meltdowns, crying, nail biting, all sorts of different things. I mean, I'm guilty of every one of those. And we look at them, or not reading by the time that we imagine that they should be. They're milestones, right? Remember, developmental milestones are just about giving us an idea where a kid might possibly be, not about where a kid should be. And we see these things, and we kind of have a tendency to move to the catastrophe that it's going to be. It's going to end in utter disaster, right? It's going to totally destroy us. And we have a tendency to see the worst. I'll tell you all an example of that. You know, first off, kind of an update for our little sweet tea, our little foster kiddo to adopt, is that the tempers and the meltdowns have been decreasing, and it's been wonderful. And however, what we've begun to notice is that we begin to notice more angry, violent reactions when it does happen. So first off, we were having 30-minute long, you know, tantrums when she first came to us, and then we were having a bunch of them. So several 30-minute or more reactive, you know, blow up type things, right? That's what we were running into. Now we're down to maybe less than a handful a day, and they only last 2 to 5 minutes at maximum now. I mean, some of them last 30 seconds, and she's bringing those. She's been able to bring them in and get that back under control real quickly. So we're seeing some wonderful little experiences here as they're getting better. But what we're noticing is that now they're beginning to shift, and so now they're turning into swinging. And my wife's been unintentionally bonked the other day. It was during a little temper tantrum, but it was just kind of a swing, and she got clocked in the eyeball, got a little bit of a black eye from it. But really, Corey said it was benign, but now it's turning into like actual swinging at her. And so my mindset went straight to this. I saw the emotional component out of all of this that was beginning to get out of control. And I was like, oh my gosh, if she's that angry, all this other stuff, what if she turns into a delinquent? What if she turns into that? What if it gets worse? Whatever it is. And I began to catastrophize. One of the more brilliant moves that we've done is go and get hooked up with a therapist for us. Since she's foster, of course, you know, foster services pay for those kinds of things, and we wanted to get her in. Well, subsequently, the therapist said, I want to see you guys for the first several. One of the best things we've done, because with all of the knowledge that I walked into this, there's been some things that have stumped me, but one of the things she caught me on this week was how I was catastrophizing. And I was seeing all these different behaviors, and she looked. I was telling her about all the things that Sweet Tea was doing, and she just looked at me and she said, "Trey, you're getting hung up on the emotions way too much." She goes, "This is just behavior, and what she's doing is that she's digging around in her toolbox and trying things with you guys, and it's not working like it did with the people she was with before. Throwing these little temper 30-minute temper tantrums don't work with y'all because y'all are going to outlast her, and then it didn't get her what she wanted anyway." And so she's digging around in those toolboxes, and now she's running into the swinging thing. She goes, "Trey, don't over catastrophize the emotional component here, because there's still a behavior connected to it." And I think it's so easy for us to look at the slightest disrespect or the slightest regression in their behavior, or the one potty after we've pulled, you know, the pull-ups off or something like that, that just seems to demoralize us, and we have a tendency to catastrophize, and we begin to become negative about it. And what does negativity breed? More of itself. So anyway, I just want to encourage you guys, don't catastrophize. Find that balance, look in the middle, or find somebody else that can find it for you if you're struggling with it. All right, got a little swig of the old green tea there. Number four. I like this one, too. I'm going to break this up into two separate parts. So first off, you have unrealistic expectations. I'm not even going to read this one because let's be straight. I think parents walk into the expectations that they have with their kids often too quickly. Now, I also see opposite versions of that where they have expectations that are too low. But I think that's the rarity. I think a lot of times we don't give our kids enough credit for what they're capable of. But I think sometimes when we walk into what we expect from them, we expect them to be able to do things, especially emotionally and mentally, that they are just not ready for. And a lot of times we have a tendency to ascribe blame when kids aren't figuring things out in a reasonable amount of time that we believe. We have a tendency to get frustrated at them instead of who are their educators. We are. We are the ones who set models for them. And in many cases, parents hate it when I tell them this, but most of the bad habits that your kids have, they picked up from you. I probably just lost about 10% of my audience listeners there. But I'm telling you guys, most of the bad habits that your kids have, no matter how much you want to blame little kids down the street, they learned them from you. But sometimes we are unrealistic in what we expect from them. And a lot of times we hold them to the ability to do things if they're not ready to do, or we frankly haven't trained them to do. The other side of this is that we often have uncommunicated expectations. This is another big one. A lot of times we tell our kids, you need to behave. What the crap does that mean? Here's what I'll promise you. What a behaving child looks like for me looks different for you. While you and I may agree on 9 out of 10 things of exactly what they should look like, but we still have that one thing that we disagree with. And first off, that's okay. But a lot of times we tell these kids things like, you need to behave, you need to be respectful. Oh, another one. You need to be respectful. Well, what does that mean? That's a big word. You ask most parents to define that. What is respect? They're going to struggle to answer that question. So we need to communicate very, very clearly what we expect from our kids. Don't just sit in the room and say, behave. It needs to be, don't break things, play with your toys. But a lot of times we don't communicate what we're wanting for them. We don't communicate what we want from them emotionally. We just tell them, stop crying, right? Stop crying. Well, maybe what I want you to do is what do you do whenever you feel upset about something? Okay. How do you calm yourself down? Right? Because that's what we're really wanting our kids to do when we say stop crying. It's not about them stop crying. We want them to control their emotions. We want them to cope with what's going on, right? In some way other than just the crying. Well, how do kids know that? How do they even know what to do if we're not teaching them? We have to communicate what we want from our kids. The other day, my daughter Cora kept coming up to me and she kept saying, Dad, can I have a hug? Yeah, Dad, can I have a hug? Yeah, Dad, can I have a hug? Now, you got to mind you, this is like 4 or 5 times in 60 seconds. We're not talking about like stretched out over an hour or something. This is within about a 60-second period of time, 1 minute. And she came up, she was like, Dad, can I have a hug? No. Dad, I want a hug. Can't have one, babe. Dad, she kept going through all these different things. And I started getting very upset with her. Very upset with her. She kept coming back. She kept asking over and over and over until I was just ready to pop at her. And what I had to do... What I had to do was I had to sit her down right by this time. Mind you, I was not amazing up until this point. I was a big turd head to her up until this point. But I finally realized that she was not understanding what I was wanting from her. And finally, I had to sit down with her and say, Babe, when you ask me this over and over and over, I feel pestered, like you're trying to make me hug you. So what I want from you different is just to ask me once every 30 minutes. I can't remember what we set up. We found a time that she could recognize where she could come back and she could ask me again. And I let her know what I wanted to do in between that, and it was very, very powerful. But again, a lot of times we walk into that not being perfectly clear what we want from them, or we tell them what we don't want to do. That's another big thing is that we have a tendency to say, well, I want you to stop doing this. Well, frankly, little kids are going to move on to the next most appealing thing, and that might be another thing we don't want them to do. So then it turns into this long list of griping instead of just telling them, here's what is okay. Here's what you can do. Number five, I'm going to parentalize just a little bit here again, and we're going to change a little bit from the initial way they said it, but I want to encourage you guys to de-victimize your children. Yeah, de-victimize your children. I think we have a lot of times we let kids believe that choices are going to be made for them, and that when they're made for them, they don't have any control in them because they're little kids, right? And I don't want my kids growing up believing that. I want my kids to grow up knowing that they have the ability to shape the things that are going to happen to them. Now, let's make sure that we're clear here. I very, very strategically choose the word shape rather than, I can hear you guys in the audience, control, rather than try to control it. For those of you guys who don't know, maybe you're new listeners, we reject the notion that there are things that we can control outside of ourselves and our own reactions. And even then, you can't control your own emotions the way you are feeling. You control what you do with those emotions in any moment, but you can't control. You can't just decide, man, that really hurt my feelings. I'm going to stop. Okay, good. I'm done. I'm not hurt anymore, right? You can't do that. You can't do that. So we reject that control is just an illusion.
Control is an illusion, you infantile egomaniac. Nobody knows what's going to happen next. Not on a freeway, not in an airplane, not inside our own bodies, and certainly not on a racetrack with 40 other infantile egomaniacs.
For those of you guys who don't know, that was Days of Thunder, one of Tom Cruise's earlier movies about a race car driver, Colt Trickle. Great movie. But also a great little quote there by Nicole Kidman, a very lovely lady. But I think that's a fairly insightful comment, is that we don't control is an illusion. It's just when there's so many variables that we can't control and manipulate and modify them all. And I think it creates a fear. And if we're not careful, that fear paralyzes us and it keeps us from doing anything for it. And I tell you, I see Christians do it all the time, and they're waiting for some kind of sign from God to do something. And it teaches indecision rather than just set your hand to something. You know, one of the things that we pray in our household, again, for those of you guys who aren't prayers or don't believe in a God of the Bible or anything like that, that's okay. This is a safe place for you at the show, but you know, we don't make any secret of it that we do. And one of the things that we pray is we pray that prayer that talks about that God will bless everything that we set our hand to. It's actually an old Jewish prayer, but it's one of our favorites. It's one of our favorites, and it's actually one of the things that we keep here in the office as one of the main quotes that stays on my board at all times. And I'll read it here. It says, "Blessed are you, Lord God of creation. Through your goodness, we have this bread to offer, which earth has given and human hands have made. It will become for us the bread of life." But we love that mentality here, that we believe that good things. We're going to word this two way. We're going to word this the scriptural way, the biblical way, and then we're going to word it in a more benign way. Number one, we say God blesses the things we set our hands to. That God just looks for us to take action. And if it's the wrong one, he corrects and modifies and guides us to those things that he wants us to do. And then blesses that is what we'll say, the word bless. Or that in this case, that whatever we do, the things that we put our hands to, God blesses. But let's say that's an uncomfortable set of way to word it. Then just flip it around. Is that that favor has a tendency to happen to those things to at least go do something. It doesn't mean we don't do the wrong thing from time to time. That doesn't mean we make the wrong choice or the wrong fit. Or, I mean, sometimes just, I mean, there's no other way to put it. Crap happens, right? But something has to or nothing gets done. And we have to teach our kids that proactiveness to get up and go do something, even if we don't know the answer. Sometimes the answer is just get off your butt and try something. To fail and to fail faster. But we're so terrified of failure. Actually, I don't think most people are afraid of failure in this country. I think they're afraid of genuine liberty. Genuine liberty requires that we have to accept not only the freedom to make the choice, but the intestinal fortitude to accept the consequences thereof, which means that I might put all this time in a Family Podcast Network and it fail and never make me much money. And I don't think it'll ever fail because already the people that have, the lives have been changed because of it. I mean, obviously it's not failing, but I need it to make money because one day I want this to be the primary breadwinner. And so with that said, we may run into that, and that's a part of the choice that I get to make. So we need our kids to understand that you may pick up and fail. You may try to go shape your fate and absolutely drop the ball, but you're guaranteed to never make a score if you don't ever pick the ball up. Number six, we don't let our kids take risks. So it's so evident nowadays in how much we try to helmet and pad our kids. You know, it reminds me a little bit of the kid from the Christmas Story who was bundled up in all the jacket and coveralls and all that stuff whenever they would go out in the snow and just couldn't hardly function. And I think we have a tendency to do that as parents in a metaphoric sense. And I don't mean that we literally stack them up in that much clothes, but I think we have a tendency to do that in a metaphoric sense, whether it be that we don't let our kids take risks, we don't let them crawl up into the scary places on the bunk beds when they're little, or, you know, we require them to have knee pads and helmets and all this other good stuff. And guys, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with knee pads or helmets. If you require your kid to wear those, I mean, I think that's very safe, but I think we've gotten to such a point to where we are so busy trying to eliminate even the possibility of failure or pain in our kids' lives. We don't allow them to live boldly. They don't get to live in a way where they're able to choose risky things. And the risky things are where our what's the word I'm looking for here? Our confidence. That's what I was looking for. Our confidence comes from. You know, some of the places that I saw myself growing the most, like say in high school, were times where like we had all gone down to a swimming hole and there was one place, it was the highest place that we could jump off. And I was that very first person to jump off and hit that water and come up. And just that riskiness that it did, because there's rocks down there. There's some jagged rocks down there. But that confidence that we got when we jumped in and came up, you know, above that water and the hooting and the hollering and the cheers of support and whatnot, it built me up. But you can't do that until you take risks. And we spend so much time trying to eliminate how much risk that our kids can take that it doesn't allow them to be exceptional. It actually communicates, you couldn't do this. You wouldn't make it. You would fail. You would totally screw up if you tried to do this. If you tried to do that very risky thing, you wouldn't be able to. Now, guys, I'm not saying that you send your kids out there without some kind of training. We've made it no secret that here at the Homestead Day Gibson, we're big shooters. We love rifles, shotguns, pistols, all sorts of good jazz. And I've got kids that are growing up wanting to shoot like Daddy does. That doesn't mean that I go hand them a pistol and say, hey, go take some risks. We have to educate and we teach how to do safety, etc. Why we do safety. So I'm not insisting that you deliberately stick them into risky situations, but in mitigated cases, we need to allow kids to take risks, but most importantly, we need to allow them to get hurt, metaphorically, literally. Because it is in those experiences that we have the wonderful ability to teach kids how to do when we get knocked over. But that's the mentality we're talking about, right, is that kids need to grow up recognizing that it's okay to fall, it's okay to screw up, it's okay to mess up. And we get such a big deal about kids not failing, not having those experiences, because we get this mentality that if they fall, it's going to ruin their self, you know, their self-worth, their self-esteem, self-concept, and that's going to kill them, and they're not going to want to try again. It's absolutely quite the opposite. Failures are amazing. It's our responsibility to teach kids that failures, mistakes, and crashes are going to happen. They're going to get knocked down, but it's our job to teach them the art of getting back up, right? Number 7, we have a tendency to constantly compare our kids to others. Huge mistake that we make as parents. We have this tendency, and guys, it's not just other people's kids. So it's not just that we look at so-and-so's kids down the street that's doing this or this one that's doing that. We even have a tendency to do that with our own kids, and that is a major parenting no-no. See, we've struggled with a lot of stuff because, you know, we find that our son is waiting a very long time to learn how to read. And it always makes us so nervous. For those of you guys who say, well, what do you mean, Trey? Why aren't you teaching him? We practice something called unschooling here, and the belief system behind it is that when kids really are ready to do something, they're proactive about it, and they'll actually learn it because they have a self-interest in it whenever it's self-directed. But if we try to force it on them, they don't have a tendency to learn, at least not deeply learn. And so, we practice this, and it gets very easy to look at what another kid is doing, what another kid is saying, how another kid is acting, how much they know, how articulated they are, and say, oh my gosh, there must be something wrong with them. This makes me nervous, right? Stop comparing your kids to others. Your other kids that you know at your church, wherever else, don't do it. Each one of your kids is individual. Each one of your kids is unique. And each piece of who they are growing themselves into being is going to be different than the other ones. As a matter of fact, there's some elements where you need to be concerned if they're turning out just like another kid. You want them to be unique. So don't give them a comparison. Because it's going to set you up, and it ain't fair to them. And frankly, it's going to make their growth process a little bit more difficult. As usual, I'm not trying to tell you that that doesn't mean that you don't be proactive in your kids' lives. Unschooling is not about you not being available, and they're on their own for them learning or growing or being wherever they should or should not be. But we have such a tendency to do a comparison for things that just don't need to be compared. They're different, unique in so many ways. It doesn't matter if they share genetic traits, genetic markers, they are still uniquely different. We've had to learn this very, very much with my daughter, Cora. She is just different from all my other kids. I mean, she eats different. She thinks different. She just does so many different things. So let me give you guys an example. We went to Chuck E. Cheese's yesterday for a birthday party for a good friend of the kids. And I say that I'm actually real good friends with the dad, but we went there, and of course, you know, they did the Chuck E. Cheese party thing. So there was pizza that was there. There were little tokens they could go play that was there, and little hats and cake and all that other good jazz. So we get there, all my kids get their cups of tokens, and most of them blew it before. I mean, they used up every one of those tokens before we even sat down to eat. So we sat down to eat, and you know, they had all their tickets they were going to cash in for whatever toy they wanted and whatnot. But not my Cora. Cora did not use up her tokens. And she sat down to eat, and we got pizza, and all my other two kids just scarfed all their pizza and scarfed all their cake and scarfed all their ice cream and sat down and watched, you know, the presents get open, and then went and started playing some more games and stuff like that. Charlotte wasn't even done with her pizza yet. She just takes her time. I'm actually at the point that nutritionally, this is no joke. Y'all mark my words to this. If y'all listen to me as my kids grow up and eventually leave this house, if y'all stay and listen to me, I want y'all to remember today, there will come a day when my daughter is confident enough in herself that I will tell her to monitor everything that I do and tell me what I can eat and what I can't eat, when I should eat and when I shouldn't eat, and to kick my butt whenever I deviate from that. I'm going to have her do that for me because her habits are so good. They're so good. But she is so different. And if I spent my time comparing her to the other three kids, or four kids now, I would set her up for failure. She is nothing like them. She loves them. She plays with them. She has a good time with them. But she does so many things different, and it's not fair for me to be expecting her to be like all the others. Number eight, sometimes I have a tendency to let people steal my time that shouldn't deserve it, that don't deserve it. And I think that we do this frequently with people in our lives. And because of that, I want to flip that to the other side of it, is because of that, we don't give our time to the people that really matter. We have a tendency to get caught up in the selfish people in our lives. Sometimes they're parents, sometimes they're siblings, sometimes they're our friends, sometimes they're our bosses. But we have a tendency to mix in with people that steal from us. They take and 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 they never give back. Don't get me wrong. There are places where I believe in those relationships, in the premise that sometimes it's our goal to teach people how to treat us. But in most cases, relationships like with these that we're talking about are as destructive as they are unhelpful. And yes, there are people that sometimes we need to prune from our lives. That doesn't mean you stop loving them. It doesn't mean that you stop respecting them. It just means that you have to prune them from our lives. I've had to do that to people that mean very deep things to me. And it's not that I don't love them, but it's because they feed off of me. They take and they take and they take, and I feel like they give nothing back. So sometimes You have to do that. And I say that with a heavy heart. So I don't mean that in like some kind of stink on that type approach. But I mean that sometimes when people leech from you, you have to remove them from their life. Or they will drain you. And because of that, when you're drained, what kind of experience do your kids get from you? You don't guard that closely enough. Give only your time to people that deserve and respect it. You have somebody in your life that's toxic, a brother, a sister. You love them. But is it time to prune? That doesn't mean that you stop seeing them. That doesn't mean you stop talking to them necessarily. But is it time? Number 9, you can't let go of your past crap. This is a big thing for parents. A lot of times parents walk into their parenting with preconceived notion, misconceptions, crappy, you know, core beliefs that they've built up because of their parents. Hurt, anger, frustration. They harbor unforgiveness towards people. They can't learn to see people as people. Maybe you need to acknowledge the fact there's somebody in your life that's died. They're dead. And there's grief that is left behind. But guys, I'm telling you, life is about loss. We lose things. People die. Friends move on. It is a fact of life. But I want to challenge you today. I agree with Tim and the author of this. He and my beliefs align perfectly. I don't think that we can enjoy real senses of happiness without loss. I don't think it's possible. Because without loss, we can't appreciate the fact that things are found to us right now. Without the threat of loss, we can't appreciate the fact that we have these people in our lives. And we have to acknowledge that fact. Because when we do, when we savor the things that are in our lives, when we acknowledge that there are things that are so, I'm going to say transient, because they can be gone in a heartbeat. When we can't come to acknowledge those things, I don't think we genuinely cherish them. And in some cases, I don't think we can really learn to appreciate the people around us until we've experienced loss. Loss isn't just necessarily a death. It is. Nor is it just a death of humans. I mean, there's animals that can be a great place for us to learn. But sometimes that can even be when we lose a job that we loved. Maybe we didn't love it money. I mean, we didn't love it a whole lot, but we loved the money we got from it. You see, loss is a powerful thing. It can motivate us if we'll let it. So guys, don't hang on to your crap, okay? Find people that you can talk to, that you trust, that are trustworthy, and talk about this stuff. Vent it out. If you're having a hard time reconciling your mind, we call that cognitive dissonance. If you're having a hard time, if there's some old belief system that clashes into something that's happening and it's creating physiological stress, it may even be time to think about talking to somebody more professional. But we got to do it, man. Our kids need us. Because when we bring in our dookie from our past, it affects our ability to do what they need in this moment. So take responsibility of your emotional mess, guys, just like you would your physical. If you had body odor from a hard workout, you don't just sit there and go, oh, I can't figure this out. It's so tough. You figure it out. You talk to people. What should I do? Oh, I need deodorant. I'm going to get me a stick of deodorant. You put it on. Solve your issues. Take care of yourself. Be proactive. It's another piece of that liberty component that we want our kids to pick up on, is that we have to take responsibility for our own mess. Number 10, this is our last one for the night. You have don't give back. This is one of mine that I have to really focus on. That ability to give back to people, to not just be a consumer. It's one of the best things we can do. It's one of the number one things that actually keeps kids out of gang activity, was community activity, getting them involved in contributing and giving to a community to make it better. It's one of the best things to help them prevent getting into gang activity. Again, it goes back to this mentality of, See, I really don't like the phrase give back. As they talk about, like, when people get money, they want to give back. See, I don't like that because to me that insinuates that they took something, right? When somebody works hard for their money and they make a lot of it, that money is theirs. There is no giving anything back. It's communism. It is theirs, and it is theirs to do with how they choose. And sometimes that might be that they're very benevolent with their money. Maybe they give some to people. But do that. Guys, I love what Tim wrote in this. He said, givers are happy. Takers are miserable. Where are you? Well, all right, guys. That's all that we have for this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. I do want to say thank you and appreciate you for your patience this week. As Jeff has been out now, how we had to cancel the Wednesday show. I really do appreciate you guys on that. We should be back in the saddle again this Monday. We're going to knock out our episode of the next Family Podcast Network show. Make sure that you guys enjoy your weekend. Think about these 10 mistakes. Which are the ones that you need to work on? Pick one and start focusing this week. What are you going to do? I mean that. All right, guys. Hope you guys have a great day, great week, and if nothing else, we'll see you guys on Monday.